In Africa, a flash flood drops almost as abruptly as it rises. The rain had stopped almost 2 hours earlier, and the slope of the valley was now almost drained. There was a high water mark on the far bank of the river, almost 6 feet above the present surface of the shrunken waters, to show how swiftly they had subsided. This time the Land Cruiser made light of the crossing. The waters did not even cover the headlights before she triumphantly climbed the far bank. "Oh, the power of prayer," Daniel grunted. "Keep it up, Jock. We'll make a believer of you yet." The next river had fallen even lower, to the level of the tops of the wheels, and Daniel did not bother to change gear ratios as they splashed through. 40 minutes later, Daniel parked the truck at the front door of the warden's bungalow at Mana Pool's camp. While Jock leaned on the horn button and sounded a long, urgent peal, Daniel pounded with both fists on the warden's door. The warden came stumbling out into the screen veranda, dressed only in a pair of underpants. "Who is it?" he called in Shona. "What the hell is going on?" He was a lean, muscled 40-year-old named Isaac Mtwetwe. "Isaac, it's me," Daniel called out. "There's big trouble, man. Get your ass in gear. You've got work to do." "Hey, Danny," Isaac shaded his eyes against the glare of the Land Cruiser's headlights. "Is that you, Danny?" He flashed his torch into Daniel's face. "What is it? What has happened?" Daniel answered him in fluent Shona. "A big gang of armed poachers has hit Chiwewe camp. They wiped out Johnny Inzu and his family and the entire camp staff." "Good God," Isaac came fully awake. "My guess is that they're from the Zambian side," Daniel went on. "I reckon they're heading back to cross the Zambezi about 20 miles downstream from here. You've got to get your anti-poaching team there to head them off." Swiftly, Daniel gave him all the other information he had gleaned, the estimated size of the gang, their weapons, the time they had left Chiwewe, and their probable line and speed of march. Then he asked, "Did the refrigerator trucks come through here from Chiwewe on their return to Harare?" "Is at about 8 o'clock, Isaac confirmed. "They just got through before the rivers flooded. There was a civilian with them, a Chinese, in a blue Mercedes. One of the trucks was towing him. The Mercedes was no good in the mud." Isaac was dressing as he spoke. "What are you going to do, Danny? I know Johnny Inzu was your friend. If you come with us, you might get a shot at these swine, although they had fought on opposite sides during the Bush War. He knew Daniel's reputation." However, Daniel shook his head. "I'm going on after the trucks and that Mercedes." I don't understand." Isaac looked up from lacing his boots, and his tone was puzzled. "I can't explain now, but it's all part of Johnny's murder. Just trust me." Daniel couldn't tell Isaac about the ivory and Ambassador Ning, not until he had proof. "Trust me," he repeated, and Isaac nodded. "Okay, Danny, I'll get those murdering swine for you before they get away across the river," he promised. "You go ahead, do what you have to do." Daniel left Isaac on the Zambezi bank, assembling his strike force of anti-poacher rangers and embarking them into the 20-foot-fast assault craft. There was a big 90-horsepower Yamaha outboard on the stern. Like the rest of them, the boat was a veteran of the Bush War. Daniel drove on westwards into the night, following the track that ran parallel to the Zambezi. Now the tire tracks of the convoy were even more deeply ploughed in the muddy earth. In the headlights, they looked as fresh as if they had been laid only 20 minutes before. Certainly they had been made since the last downpour of rain. The pattern of the treads was clearly moulded in black cotton clay of the roadway. Obviously one of the trucks was still towing the Mercedes. Daniel could pick out the scuff marks where the tow rope had touched the earth at intervals. The tow would slow them down considerably, Daniel thought with satisfaction. He must be gaining on them rapidly now. He peered ahead eagerly, half expecting to see the red glow of the Mercedes taillights appear out of the darkness, and he reached out to touch the AK-47 rifle propped between the seats. Jock noticed the gesture and warned him softly. "Oh, don't do anything stupid, Danny. You don't have any proof, man. You can't just go blowing the ambassador's head off on suspicion. Cool it, man, cool it." It seemed that they were further behind the convoy than Daniel had hoped. It was after midnight when they intersected the Great North Road, the metalled highway that crossed the Churundu Bridge over the Zambezi to the north, and to the south climbed the escarpment of the valley on its serpentine route to Harare, the capital of Zimbabwe. Daniel pulled the Land Cruiser into the verge at the road junction. He jumped out with the maglight in his hand. In all probability, the convoy would have turned south towards Harare. They couldn't have hoped to get two huge government trucks loaded with fresh game meat and ivory through both the Zimbabwean and Zambian customs post, not even with the dispensation of the most princely bribes. Daniel found confirmation of his deduction almost immediately. The tyres of the trucks and the Mercedes had been caked with clinging black clay. They left clear tracks on the tarmac of the highway. The tracks gradually faded out as the last vestiges of clay were spun off the tyres, but for almost a mile further the moulded bars of mud from between the treads of the tyres littered the tarmac like squares of chocolate. "South," said Daniel, as he climbed back behind the driving wheel. "They're heading south, and we're catching up with them every minute." He pushed the Land Cruiser hard and kicked in the ferry overdrive. The speedometer needle touched 90 miles per hour, and the heavy tyres whined shrilly on the black tarmac surface of the highway. "Well, they can't be much further ahead," Daniel muttered. As he said it, he saw the glow of headlights in front of them. He touched the stock of the AK rifle again, and Jock glanced at him nervously. "For Christ's sakes, Danny, I don't want to be an accessory to bloody murder. They say Chikurubu Prison isn't exactly 5-star accommodation." The lights were closer now, and Daniel switched on the Land Cruiser's powerful spotlights, then exclaimed with disappointment. He had expected to see the distinctive hull of the refrigerator truck standing up tall and polar white in the beam of the spotlight. Instead, he found a vehicle that he'd never seen before. It was a gigantic Mack truck, a 20-tonner, towing an equally large 8-wheel trailer. Both the hull of the truck and the body of the trailer were covered by a heavy-duty green nylon tarpaulin and roped down with hook-and-eye arrangement that securely protected the cargo. This massive road rig was pulled off the highway and parked in a lay-by at the roadside, facing back northwards towards Chirundu Bridge. Three men were working around the trailer, adjusting the ropes that held the tarpaulin in place. The beam of the spotlight froze them, and they stared back at the approaching Land Cruiser. Two of the men were black Africans dressed in faded overalls. The third was a dignified figure in a khaki safari suit. He was also dark-complexioned but bearded, and wearing some sort of white headgear. It was only when Daniel got closer that he realized that it was a neatly bound white turban, and that the man was a Sikh. His beard was carefully curled and rolled up into the folds of the turban. As Daniel slowed the Land Cruiser and pulled up in front of the parked truck, the Sikh spoke sharply to the two Africans. All three of them turned and hurried back to the front of the truck and climbed aboard. "Hey, hold it a second," Daniel shouted, and jumped out of the Land Cruiser. "I want to talk to you." The Sikh was already seated behind the wheel. "Hold on," Daniel called urgently and came level with the cab. The Sikh was 5 feet above the level of his head, and he leaned out of the window and peered down at Daniel. "Yes, what is it?" "I'm sorry to trouble you," Daniel told him. "Have you passed two large white trucks on the road?" The Sikh stared down at him without answering, and Daniel added, "Very big trucks, you couldn't miss them. Travelling together in convoy, there might have been a blue Mercedes saloon with them." The Sikh pulled his head in and spoke to the two Africans in a dialect that Daniel could not understand. While he waited impatiently for a reply, Daniel noticed a company logo painted on the front door panel of the truck. "Chetty Singh Limited, Import and Export, P.O. Box 52, Lilongwe, Malawi." Malawi was the small sovereign state that nestled between the three much larger territories of Zambia, Tanzania, and Mozambique. It was a country of mountains and rivers and lakes, whose population was as prosperous and happy under its octogenarian dictator, Hastings Banda, as any state on the poverty and tyranny-ridden continent of Africa. "Mr. Singh, I'm in a desperate hurry," Daniel called. "Please tell me if you've seen those trucks." The Sikh popped his head back out of the window in alarm. "How do you know my name?" he demanded, and Daniel pointed at the logo on the door. "Ha! You are one very observant and erudite fellow, never mind." The Sikh looked relieved. "Yes, my men reminded me that two trucks passed us 1 hour ago. They were heading south. We did not see a Mercedes with them. I am totally certain of that salient fact. No Mercedes, absolutely." He started the engine of the Mack truck. "I am happy to have served you. I am also in desperate haste. I must return home to Lilongwe. Farewell, my friend. Safe journey and happy landings." He waved cheerily and let the huge truck roll forward. Something about his airy manner struck a false note in Daniel's mind. As the heavily loaded trailer rumbled past him, Daniel caught hold of one of the steel slats and swung himself up onto the footplate below the trailer's tailgate. The headlights of the parked Land Cruiser gave him enough light to peer between the steel slats of the bodywork and the edge of the tarpaulin cover. The trailer seemed to be packed with a full load of gunny sacks. Stenciled on one of the sacks, that he could see, was the legend Dried Fish, product of... The country of origin was obscured. Daniel's nose confirmed the contents of the sacks. The smell of half-rotten fish was powerful and unmistakable. The truck was gathering speed swiftly, and Daniel dropped off and let his own momentum carry him forward as he hit the ground. He ran with it for a dozen paces and then pulled up and stared after the dwindling taillights. His instinct warned him that something was as fishy as the stink from under the tarpaulin of the departing trailer. But what could he do about it? He tried to think. His main concerns were still the convoy of refrigerator trucks and Ning in his Mercedes, which was heading southwards, while the Sikh in his Mack truck was rumbling away in the opposite direction. He couldn't follow both of them, even if he could prove a connection between them, which he could not. Chetty Singh, he repeated the name and the box number, to fix it firmly in his mind, then ran back to where Jock waited in the Land Cruiser. "Who was that? What did he say?" Jock wanted to know. "He saw the refrigerator trucks heading south about an hour ago. We're going after them." He pulled out of the lay-by, and they raced on southwards at their top speed. The road began to climb the hills that led up onto the high central plateau, and the Land Cruiser's speed bled off slowly, but still they were doing around 70 miles an hour. Jock had not spoken again since they had met Chetty Singh, but his features were drawn and nervous in the light reflected from the instrument panel. He kept glancing sideways at Daniel as if he were about to protest, but then thought better of it. The road went into a series of gentle curves as it followed the gradient of the hills. They came through the next curve, and without warning, one of the white refrigerator trucks blocked the road ahead of them. It was travelling at half the speed of the Land Cruiser, and diesel smoke belched out of its exhausts as it laboured upwards in low gear. The driver was holding the middle line of the highway, not leaving sufficient space for Daniel to pass him. Daniel sounded his horn and flicked his spotlights on and off to induce the truck to move over, but it never wavered. "Move over, you murdering bastard!" Daniel snarled, and hit the horn button with another prolonged blast. "Now take it easy, Daniel," Jock pleaded. "You're going over the top, man. Cool it." Daniel swung the Land Cruiser out onto the far verge of the road, into an overtaking position, and he sounded the horn again. Now he could see the wing mirror on the cab of the truck, and reflected in it the face of the driver. The driver was Gomo. He was watching Daniel in the mirror, but making no effort to give way and let him pass. His expression was a mixture of fear and ferocity, of guilt and bitter resentment. He was deliberately blocking the road, swinging wide on the corners and weaving the truck back and across when Daniel tried to pass him on the wrong side. "Ah, he knows it's us," Daniel told Jock angrily. "He knows we've been back to Chihuahua and seen the bloody business there. He knows we suspect him and he's trying to hold us off." "Oh, come on, Danny. That's all in your head, man. There could be a dozen explanations for why he's behaving like this. I don't want any part of this crazy business." "Ha! Too late, my friend," Daniel told him. "Like it or not, you're part of it now." Daniel pulled the Land Cruiser sharply back in the opposite direction. For once, Gomo was slow to react and get across the road to block him. Daniel dropped a gear and thrust the accelerator flat. The Land Cruiser jumped forward and got round the truck's tall tail end. Still holding the accelerator flat to the floorboards, Daniel drew level with the cab, squeezing through the gap between the steel side of the hull and the edge of the road. Only the near-side wheels of the Land Cruiser had purchase on the tarmac surface. The off-side wheels were on the verge of the highway, throwing up a spray of loose gravel, dangerously close to the edge that fell away steeply into the Zambezi Valley below them. "Danny, you mad bastard!" Jock yelled angrily. "You'll get us both killed! I've had enough of this bullshit, man!" The Land Cruiser hit one of the concrete road markers with its reflective cat's eyes that warned of the dangerous drop. With a crash, they snapped off the roadside and swayed dangerously. but Daniel held grimly to the outside berth and inched up alongside the cab of the lumbering truck. Gomo stared down at the Land Cruiser from the vantage point of the high cab. Daniel leant forward to see him, lifted one hand from the wheel and made a peremptory hand signal for him to pull over and stop. Gomo nodded and obeyed, swinging the truck back to the left, giving way to the Land Cruiser. "Oh, that's more like it," Daniel grated, and edged back into the space alongside the truck that Gomo had opened for him. He had fallen into the trap and let down his guard. The two vehicles were still grinding along side by side, and Gomo suddenly spun the driving wheel hard back in the opposite direction. Before Daniel could react, the truck crashed into the side of the Land Rover, and showers of sparks blazed from the violent contact of steel against steel. The weight and momentum of the huge truck flung the smaller vehicle back over the verge. Daniel fought the wheel to try and resist the thrust, but the struts flew through his fingers, and he thought for a moment that his left thumb was dislocated. The pain numbed him to the elbow. He hit the brakes hard, and the Land Cruiser slowed and allowed the truck to pull ahead, with a shriek of metal between the two vehicles as they disengaged. The Land Cruiser came to rest, half over the embankment, with one front wheel hanging over the cliff face. Daniel wrung his injured hand, tears of agony welling into his eyes. Gradually he felt strength return, and with it his anger. By now the truck was 500 yards ahead, and pulling away rapidly. With the Land Cruiser in four-wheel drive, Daniel flung her into reverse. Only three of her wheels had purchase, but she heaved herself gamely back from the drop. Her near side was scraped down to bare gleaming metal where the truck had struck her. "Okay," Daniel snarled at Jock. "Do you want any more proof? That was a deliberate attempt to ride us off. That bastard Gomo is guilty as hell." The truck had disappeared from view around the next curve of the highway, and Daniel hurled the Land Cruiser in pursuit. "Gomo isn't going to let us get ahead of him," Daniel told Jock. "I'm going to get onto that truck and take him out of it." "I want no more part of this business," Jock muttered. "Leave it to the police now, damn it." Daniel ignored his protest and pushed the Land Cruiser to its top speed. As they came through the bend, the refrigerator truck was only a few hundred yards ahead. The gap between them closed swiftly. Daniel studied the other vehicle. The scrape marks down its side were not as extensive as the damage to the Land Cruiser, and Gomo was making better speed now as the slope of the hill eased away towards the crest of the escarpment. The double rear doors of the cargo hold were locked with a heavy vertical bar. The airtight seals were black rubber around the edge of the doors. On the near side of the hull, a steel ladder gave access to the flat roof where the cooling fans of the refrigerator equipment were housed in fiberglass pods. "I'm going to get onto that ladder," Daniel told Jock. "As soon as I'm gone, you slide over and grab the wheel." "Ha! Not me, man, I told you. I've had a gutful. Count me out." "Fine." Daniel did not even glance at him. "Don't steer. Let her crash, and you with her. What's one stupid prick less in this naughty world?" Daniel was judging the speed and distance between the two converging vehicles. He opened his side door. The retaining catch on the door had been removed to allow unimpeded photography through the opening, so the door hinged fully open, to lie flat against the side of the bonnet. Steering with one hand, Daniel leaned out of the open door. "Take her, she's yours," he shouted at Jock. Daniel hauled himself up onto the roof, the pain in his thumb forgotten. At that moment, Gomo once again swung across to block the Land Cruiser. As the two vehicles came together, Daniel leapt across the narrow gap. He caught the rung of the side ladder and hauled his lower body out from between the steel sides of the vehicles as they clashed together again. He had a glimpse of Jock at the driver's wheel, pale-faced and sweating in the reflected headlights. Then the Land Cruiser swerved away and fell behind the white truck, Jock steering it erratically, letting the slope slow it, finally bringing it to a halt on the side of the road. Daniel clambered upwards, hand over hand, agile as an ape on the narrow steel rungs, and reached the flat roof of the truck. The fan housing was in the centre of the roof, and a low grab rail ran the length of the hull, fore and aft. On hands and knees, Daniel worked his way forward, falling flat on his belly, and clinging grimly to the rail when the centrifugal force of the truck through the bends threatened to throw him from the roof.